was pre-recorded for broadcast at this time.
Ask an Attorney is sponsored by the Law Offices of Joe Pippin. Learn more at attypip.com.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in today to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. For almost 40 years, this program was hosted by attorney Joe Pippin, and every Saturday morning, Joe would come to the radio studio for the sole purpose of answering any legal questions that his listeners and callers had for him on that day. Well, as you may know, sadly, on July 29th of this year, Joe Pippin passed away. And since that time, on this radio station and on the others that have carried his program for all of these years, we've been paying tribute to Joe and the work that he did on the radio for all of those years. And so that's what we're going to do one more time today. We hope you'll enjoy this audio archive.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney and host of Ask an Attorney now since 1984. Every week I've done one or multiple shows of Ask an Attorney, just trying to help people. I believe it's the longest running continual program in the state of Florida. Maybe, I don't know, maybe the nation. It's a long time. People like Rush Limbaugh haven't. I know he's every day, and it's quite different than doing a weekend show, but he's been on less time, and he started later than I did. Let's go to Lonnie in Tampa. Hey, Lonnie.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
My question is this. My neighbor who lives next to him, who I get along well with, but there's a tree that the previous neighbor planted that's right along just inside their fence line.
Mm-hmm.
But the roots of that tree are really just over on my side of the yard, and they're beginning to grow to the side of the house where it is. Like, I'm worried about them getting under the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can legally chop up and dig up those roots on my yard with no, you know, ramifications as far as even if it kills that tree, can I?
Well, you can certainly cut the roots on your side of the yard, but I would have a tree expert come in,
Okay. Actually,
and do that for you and do it in a way the tree doesn't die.
Okay.
Because you might have, you have the freedom of doing what you need to do on your space, but you might have the liability if the tree dies. So
okay, gotcha. That's so, what I was worried
yeah,
about.
Yeah, you want to do it professionally.
Like, yep.
Yeah, and some trees, yeah. The roots, you know, have roots going all over the place. You cut off a few, it won't make much difference. You just want to make sure a tree person is in charge of doing this and telling me your goal is to, you know, not let these roots endanger my property, but I don't want to kill the tree, so cut off what you can.
All right, and if a tree expert says, well, more than likely, you know, there's no way to do it without it, then I just need to let the neighbor know pretty much that, hey, this is going to probably be an issue.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, because it looks like the tree roots, because on the other side of the tree, there's more like the pool and where they drain the chlorine. So I think the tree roots have naturally started growing over to my side. And, I mean, they are actually above the ground to the point that, you know, you trip when you walk on that side or when I'm cutting the grass.
How big is the tree? How big around is it?
It's not super large in circumference, maybe 2.5 feet in circumference, maybe not even that much. It's like one of those Christmas tree-looking fir type that grows up. It's a tree is about 30 feet high, but it's not a large, and, you know, the circumference is not that large. But the roots themselves are growing toward my house, and they're only really about 1.5 feet away from, you know, from my structure that I can see. And that's just the thing, the ones that are above ground, the big knots that are beginning to appear above ground.
Are the roots going over a sidewalk or driveway?
No, it's all grass.
I mean under, okay.
Right.
Yeah, they should be able to do something, at least cut off some of it without any danger.
Okay. All right, so I can legally do whatever here, but like you said, I just need to maybe let them know if it turns out that it may be a problem for the tree.
Yeah, and can you talk to the neighbor?
Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh.
And how much do you think a new smaller tree that could be planted, you know, a little further away from the property line would cost?
Oh, that'd be minimal. It wouldn't be that big of an expense.
Well, there's the other thing. It's an economic question. You know, you don't want the damage to your house. You don't want to be involved in a lawsuit about the loss of a tree. Offer to, you know, tell him what you're going to do. See if you can get his approval. That would be great.
Okay.
And if the tree dies, offer to pay for half of a new, smaller tree.
Okay. All right.
Sometimes there are other ways to, you know, go about
it. Yeah, we get along fine. You know, all of us get along fine, but I just happened to notice that, and it's really, I mean, it's to the point, like I said, it's 3 or 4 knots
Well, hey, the simple solution it was to get him to sign a simple one or two sentence statement that he gives you permission to cut the roots off to prevent damage to your house.
Okay.
And get him to sign something and just cut them. If you can do that, and then you won't have to worry about it. If he gave you permission to cut the roots, he accepted the possibility that the tree would die.
Okay. All right.
All right.
All right. Fair enough. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right, thank you again.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Let's go to Beverly in Sarasota.
Thank you, Joe, for taking my call. I listen to you every Saturday.
You're great. Thank you.
I have a problem. I live in Manatee County, and I own a house, a co-own a house with another person. I'm being sued in upstate New York. If they should win the lawsuit and they get a judgment, can they attach it to my house in the state of Florida?
No, your homestead is exempt asset, free from the claims of creditors.
Okay.
So basically, if they get a judgment against you, that becomes a lien, but that lien can't be enforced to take your homestead away from you.
Okay. Will it stay on the homestead until it's sold, like other states do?
Yeah, it'll stay on there until it's sold, but you can transfer the money to another homestead. There's ways to transfer the money to another homestead that's still protected.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to be sure of that. Thank you, Joe.
Beverly, do you have children?
I do. I have three.
Well, you got big plans for Mother's Day this weekend?
Unfortunately, down here, we usually go to the beach every holiday, my significant other and myself. But my children one's in New York State, one's in Vermont, and the other one's out in California. So I don't get really to see them other than doing FaceTime.
All right.
We do FaceTime.
Well, I hope you at least get to enjoy that with them, and I wish you a very happy Mother's Day.
Thank you so much, Joe,
all right.
And God bless you.
God bless you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. You have a legal question, be more than glad to try to help you. Let's go to George in Jacksonville.
Excuse me. I had a follow-up on the lady from Manatee County. My father-in-law was drawing up a will, and they advised him to do something to protect himself. If, let's say, he got in a car wreck and he was found negligent, that the person could sue and actually make him sell his house if he had any equity in it. I've never heard of that.
That case pertaining to Florida?
It was pertaining to Florida. He said it was a new law that in the case of a lawsuit and you lose it, they could actually force you to sell your house for the equity.
George, I don't think that's true. I think it's clear under Florida Statute 222, that a homestead is protected in a case like that.
Well, that's what I thought, because we drew our in-laws, we drew them up a simple will.
Mm-hmm.
The attorney added some stuff in it. I wish I had the will in front of me, because he added that to protect. What's the best way to turn over house? To go through probate or to put your relatives on it, a daughter, a son?
No, you never put your relatives on it. Number one, that's a gift, and you could lose your homestead exemption for at least part of the house. You never do that. What most of my clients, the majority of my clients, would do to avoid probate is a living trust.
Living trust.
So you place we do quit claim deed from the person to themselves as trustees of their own trust. There's no loss of homestead. By doing that, you avoid the petition to determine the homestead and all that proceeding to the probate court. And it can be transferred by the successor trustee to the next party, usually very, very simply.
Very good. Thank you for the information.
All right, let's go to Winifred in Bradenton.
Hello?
Yes, what can we do for you?
I have a will, which I made probably 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
where my oldest daughter and my youngest daughter are both executors on the will. Mm-hmm. But my oldest daughter died in December, and so I know she would. I'm leaving my estate to my children.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering, what is the simplest way to make her son, since he's like a son to me, make her husband part of my will? Would I just, what is the simplest way to do that?
Well, just do a new, either do a codicil to the will or a new will. We charge the same thing for a codicil or a new will, which is like $125.
Okay.
So we just do a new document that names whoever you want to be as your beneficiary. If you want to name your deceased daughter's, I'm very sorry about your daughter, but if you want to name your deceased daughter's husband as a beneficiary, then you just have to either change the existing document or do a new document.
Okay.
During the if you came to me, for example, during that conversation, you know, I'd be glad to do a new will for you, but I'd also want to discuss with you the advantages you might have in considering a living trust to avoid probate. If you didn't,
I don't know whether I would have to.
Well, it was just.
Isn't there a dollar amount that you have to reach to go to probate, or
no, not really, because any size estate goes through probate, and the minimum probate fee is like $2,500 that we charge. And there's about a $600 or $700 out of pocket cost. So, you know, you're into over $3,000 to do a probate even on a very small estate. And you can avoid that with a trust, and we have a package fee, flat fee for trust packages like $695. And that includes the trust, the deed, the power of attorney, the living will, healthcare surrogate living will. You get a whole new package of all the documents you need for the flat fee.
For the flat fee of what, $695?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, that sounds like that's a better way to go.
Well, that's what most of my clients do. Maybe not everybody, but that's what most of my clients do, too. It's just a fancy will that avoids probate.
Okay. Okay. Well, that sounds very good. I don't think I have any other questions.
All right.
For your information.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye now.
All right. Let's go to Charlie calling. Yes, Charlie. What can I do for you?
My question is, I have a living will with my three kids.
You have a living trust?
A living will. A living trust. I'm sorry. Yeah. Not a living trust. No. What do you call them?
The last will and testament?
Last will and testament. Right.
Okay.
With the percentage or the separation of the property. Now, somebody advised me to register the property on with the life estate in the same way to the county.
Yeah, you can do a ladybird deed or a life estate deed. You can do that.
So this way they don't have to go to probate. Am I right?
Yes, you can do it that way. I usually, when I'm discussing this with clients, we can discuss that if they have a question about it. I do think a living trust is a better way to plan, because with a living trust, you can the successor trustee can deal with the property better while you're living, whereas a life estate deed, nothing really happens until you pass away on the transfer, but things might need to be done while you're living for your benefit.
I see. But, I mean, if a home state, it doesn't change if I do that, right?
No. Either way, there's no change in the homestead status.
Okay. Good enough. Thank you so much. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you.
If you're just tuning in today, we are continuing to pay tribute to our friend Joe Pippin, who passed away on July 29th of this year, and the Ask an Attorney program, the only one of its kind, hosted by him for all of those years. And he truly loved having these weekly conversations with the listeners and the callers of the program, essentially giving free legal advice. And so let's continue on with more of Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law, with the late, great Joe Pippin.
Let's go to Donna calling from Sun City Center. Hey, Donna.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Yes, I have a will made out, and I want to change who I'm leaving my estate to. Do I need to redo the whole will, or can I have an addendum to it?
Well, the thing is that I charge the same thing for a codicil to a will as a new will. So most of the time, the answer would be we just do a new will.
Oh, okay. That makes it simple.
So the fee's like $125. It's just much cleaner, you know, and sometimes the codicil will get detached from the will, and it just seems to me it's better just to do a brand new will.
Okay, that's perfect.
So, and as you may know, have I done documents for you in the past?
No, you haven't. I learned about you through this radio.
Okay, so. Well, we have an office in Sun City Center. We're in the Pant Financial Center Encore Bank building. It's a yellow bank It's a yellow building right there on the corner of 674, right next to the Chamber of Commerce.
I know exactly where it is.
So I'm inside the Encore Bank there, and I'm there once or twice a week. But you need to just call our main number if you'd like for me to help you, which I'll give out during the show.
Absolutely.
And make an appointment.
Thank you very much.
And when I meet you, you tell me that you're Donna that called me on the radio show. I would love to hear that, so that'd be great.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Let's go to Russell in Pasco.
Hi, Joe. This is Russ. Thank you for getting my call, and good morning.
Well, good morning to you, sir.
All right, buddy. I just want to do something about the situation. I'm getting a phone call 2-3 times a day for the past 3 weeks, and it could even be 4, that I'm being sued, and for me to call this number. It's not even a person. It's a computer that talks to me. I haven't called the number yet, or don't even want to bother, but I'm getting these phone calls.
Do you pick up the phone and answer it?
They'll say, and they'll put the number in and stuff. But
so why do you answer your phone?
I don't know. I don't answer the phone for that. But they're talking into the machine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a computer. What can I do about it? Can I do anything?
Is it the same number each time that calls you?
No. Like, for instance, yesterday was one from San Francisco, and then I didn't answer it, and my machine picked it up. And then as soon as it hung up, another call came from Las Vegas 2 minutes later.
Yeah.
And I didn't answer it either. You think it's bogus, or am I being sued? But it's like they say, if I don't...
Well, I think it's bogus, and I wouldn't worry about being sued till something shows up in the mail.
Yeah, at least legally, right?
I get these calls from all over the place that say that the IRS... I tell you, I got one of these calls, you know, from the IRS, and the IRS never gives you a phone call.
Yeah, exactly.
So I get a number and call it, and of course, nobody answers.
Yeah, yeah, right?
So then you just ignore it.
Just ignore it, okay. I keep on getting it?
Yeah, I tell you, once in a while, I will pick up a phone. There's somebody trying to call me, and I will say, listen, and if I get to talk to a person, I'll say, listen, I'm on the do not call list. So what I would like is your name and phone number, because I need to file a lawsuit against you and your company for calling me.
If I talk to a live person.
Yeah, and then they just hang up and click. I mean, you don't hear anything else after that.
Yeah, that's because you're scared of them.
And sometimes I'll call and they'll start to, if I talk to a live person, they'll spiel, and I say, look, don't say anything else. Please take me off your call list. And once in a while, someone will say, okay, I will, thank you. Now, I don't, you know, sometimes I don't get calls from those people. So, I mean, there are various ways to deal with all this. I know it's a nuance.
They call
on at night and on weekends. It doesn't matter when they call. It's just a harassment, basically. It's the way I look at it.
Exactly. Well, Joe, thank you very much for your info. I can use it, buddy.
All right, Russell, nice talking to you.
Nice talk to you, guy. Thank you.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. Let's go to Mary in Jacksonville.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about, I have a home and a cottage that's on the same piece of property in Hawaii that I wanted to rent out to make some extra income.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I was calling was just to ask you about if it would be wise to incorporate that in like an LLC for tax purposes and... you know, for protection of the assets on the property.
Well, the primary benefit of an LLC for rental property is asset protection, of course.
Right.
And I think any rental property probably should be in an LLC for protection. I think that's a good plan.
Okay, I got you. And then on that particular issue, does all the checks that you write out to different people, do they have to be written in a checkbook that says LLC on the, you know, with the name of the property with the LLC on that checkbook, or can you just still write out your main checks and apply it toward the...
Well, I think for tax record keeping, you'd be smart to, if you have an LLC, to have an LLC checking account.
Uh-huh.
And for tax purposes and for accounting purposes and for the IRS and everything, it would be much cleaner if you didn't commingle everything individually
Yeah, I have a separate checkbook.
Right, and also if you have real estate in Hawaii, you're a Florida resident?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, you should probably have a living trust because you're going to have probate in two states. And an LLC interest of property in Hawaii, you can assign that to a trust, and you can have one Florida trust to cover both things.
Yeah, I would like to do that because the property there is not in a trust. I own another piece of property that does not have any dwellings on it, but it's a vacant lot that is in a trust, and I'd like to be able to incorporate the other property that does have the rentals on it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I put it in the same trust. It should be in a separate trust.
You can keep the separate entity of an LLC, and you can put it into one trust. The LLC interest is still a separate entity, even though it's inside your trust.
I got you. Yeah, I want to do that for asset protection, mainly because I'm leaving it to my daughter or something happens to me. Well, thank you very much.
All right, let's see if Lee is on the line here. Hey, Lee.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I have a question kind of like the first caller that called in this morning about a vehicle. My wife and I have purchased a vehicle in Jacksonville from a dealer. We purchased a vehicle. It was a used vehicle. And when we signed the contract, when I first inspected the vehicle, I noticed that it had a small oil leak on the bottom of the vehicle. So I had the dealer sign that if anything was wrong within the first 30 days, he would fix the problem. I have him signed and initialed on every piece of paperwork that we wound up doing. 30 days goes by. We tried to contact him probably 10 times. I have all the text message and all the phone call records of me trying to contact him. He never got a hold of us, wouldn't take our calls. After 32 days, he calds me back and responds to me. And beyond that, he was supposed to title our vehicle. We paid for him to go ahead and do the title process. He never did that as well. Now, this was a few months ago, so now down the line, we've had to retitle the vehicle, file a complaint with the DMV so we could actually get a title for our vehicle, and we had to come out of pocket for another almost $200 to title the vehicle. Is there any kind of course of action I can take against this guy?
Write him a certified letter, then unless he makes good on all this, you go to small claims court. That's up to $5,000. You don't have to hire an attorney. You can do it yourself.
Great.
Sounds like you'd probably be successful. Are you calling from the Jacksonville area?
No, I'm at work right now. I do pest prevention for a job. I live in Yulee, Florida.
Uh-huh.
I'm calling from St. Mary's right now.
Okay.
But I'm trying to find a way because this is my wife's vehicle. We had our fourth child. We needed a bigger vehicle, and he looked like a nice guy. But like I said, as of now, his dealer's license has been suspended through the DMV because of our complaint that we filed, and we just wound up getting the vehicle titled yesterday.
I'll send him a certified letter. What I tell people to do is go down to the small claims court, get the forms, fill them out, mail him a copy, tell him you hate to do this, but he did you wrong, and you need to be compensated for it, and give him a deadline.
Great. I really appreciate it.
All right, Lee, thanks for calling. You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. Let's go to Kevin.
Hey, as usual, I certainly enjoy your shows on the morning there and the information. I have a question, kind of twofold. Something happened to a good friend of mine. Unfortunately, his wife had depression and committed suicide. We found copies of the will. But my understanding is, and I never knew this, that a copy is no good unless it's notarized or stamped or something.
All right. Did the wife that committed suicide leave everything to her husband in this will?
Yes. The will was done in the 90s. And what she did leave, though, was a handwritten suicide note and leaving everything to her son.
No, that would be invalid.
That would be invalid.
Yeah, the note wasn't witnessed or notarized, correct?
Correct.
Okay. With no witnesses, that's a worthless piece of paper, basically.
But with a will, you really want the original. The problem is the attorney, this was done in the early 90s, he's passed. So it kind of enlightened me to go back and make sure, everybody knows that. Update your will like you're talking about every couple years.
Yeah, do you know if husband and wife owned everything jointly with right of survivorship as the way they owned assets? Did they own them together?
Somewhat. They were kind of in a separation, so he bought her a new house, and it's in her name. So I think that has to go through probate now.
Does he have the original will that leaves everything to him?
Yes, but it's not the stamped or dated. It's a copy.
It's a copy.
And they're telling him copies aren't worth.
All right. Were all the children of one marriage?
Yes.
The first marriage? Okay, I think it's not going to matter. I think under fairly new probate statutes that he would get everything, even if the wife, if there are children all of the same marriage, I think under the new statute he's going to get everything anyway. So he would need to hire a probate attorney, and we do offer a free consult on what that's like and what he has to go through.
Okay, I'll tell him to call you. That was interesting. I never thought about, you keep the will in the safe, but maybe you should be updating it, like you said, every 3-4 years. Okay, Joe. Thank you very much.
All right, Kevin. Thanks. All right, let's go to May in Tampa. Hey, May.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a home that my husband lives in, and he remarried. And now we want to borrow money on the house. Now, I'm going to be signing on the loan. My name is still on the deed. Now, is there any way that they could go behind my back and do a quick claim on it after I sign?
No, a mortgage is not ownership. A mortgage is liability. So as long as your name is on the deed. Now, your husband could, when you got divorced, your property became jointly with right of survivorship probably to tenants in common, which means you each own half.
Mm-hmm.
So he could sell his half, but not your half.
Okay, it never can come out of my name because if anything should happen to either of us, this way the children grew up, I wouldn't want the second wife to come in and take over, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he cannot sell your half.
Okay.
If only you're doing a mortgage.
Thank you so kindly. I listen to you every week. You've been so helpful in the state of Florida, and we really need you here. So stay in the business.
I've done it for 31 years, so I don't plan on going anywhere.
I know. I've listened to you quite a while, so thank you so much.
Now, listen, you're going to sign a joint mortgage, so if he doesn't make the payment, they can come after you totally, and you only own half the house. So it's not... It's not always a great deal to do what you're about to do. Do you understand what I'm saying? Your ex-husband doesn't pay the mortgage. Well, they're going to come after you. If he doesn't have money and doesn't have any assets and you do, you could really be stuck with the mortgage because the bank's going to sue both people and they're going to go after the one with called the deep pockets, the one that has the money. So,
I see.
I'm not sure that's a great idea on your part. But to answer your question is no, he can't sell your half.
All right. Thank you so much, Joe. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. All right. Let's go to, is it Josie in Palm Harbor?
I have a question regarding a cousin of mine who's 74 years old. She has approximately $30,000 in credit card debt. Will her pension and her Social Security be garnished if she doesn't pay these charges? She's in a position where she can't afford to pay anything.
Social Security and retirement accounts and pension are protected assets under Florida Statute 222.
Oh, okay.
So I think she'll be okay.
Really? Oh, that's good to hear. So in other words, I mean, if she just stops paying them, they can't go after her.
What I would do if I were her, I think.
Yeah.
I would offer to pay, $5 to $10 a month.
Really?
I would tell them I'm unable to pay the credit card debt.
Uh-huh.
I have no savings, minimal checking accounts, and the only things I receive are Social Security and my pension checks, which I understand are protected by Florida law.
Okay.
I'm willing to pay you $10 a month because I, would like to be responsible for this, but that's the most I can afford to pay. See what kind of response you get.
Oh, okay. Thank you for your help.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
If you're just tuning in, this is a special tribute broadcast of Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law with the late Joe Pippin. Joe passed away on July 29th of this year. And since that time, we've been airing portions of broadcasts that he conducted over the almost 40 years of the Ask an Attorney program, all about Florida law. We appreciate you being with us as we continue down this audio archive of the Ask an Attorney program with Joe Pippin. Let's continue.
Let's go to Dan in St. Petersburg. Hey, Dan, what can we do for you?
Why are most disability claims always denied on the first time around? Do you know, or is that too broad of a question?
You know, I've heard that over and over again, and a lot of times I hear that they're denied on the first round, but once you appeal them, you have success.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people try to do disability claims themselves, and there's a little problem in the application or the paperwork that they didn't have an attorney do for them, or some professional that deals with that do that for them, and it gets denied. And then they get frustrated, but if they hire somebody to do it on appeal, it gets done correctly, and therefore success.
Okay. Even though you say you have all your medical forms, you fill the application out correctly, do you need an attorney? Is that advisable? And what is our normal fee? I heard of something like between 3 and 5% of the back pay. Is that true?
Yeah, I don't do disability claims, so I'm not really familiar with how fees are charged and what you can do. I have heard over and over and over again that their first application was denied, but they were successful on an appeal. So,
okay,
I think if an attorney had possibly done it the first time, it might not have been denied just because it was submitted correctly.
Okay. Well, Joe, that answered my question, sir. I do appreciate it.
All right, Dan, thanks. Hey, let's go to St. Cloud, Florida, and talk to Mary. Hey, Mary.
Hi.
Hey, where is St. Cloud? I forget where St. Cloud is.
Kissimmee,
okay.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering, when you go in the hospital and, you know, you sign all those papers and something doesn't come out good for your surgery, do we have a legal right yet to sue the doctor?
Okay, so you're saying the doctor committed malpractice.
Well, things didn't come out right.
So the question is, if he committed malpractice, can you still sue him after you sign all those forms?
Yes,
you can. If he did not provide the standard of care and the absence of standard of the care and the procedure he did resulted in an injury to you, you still have a right to sue.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Robert in Jacksonville.
Hey, how are you doing? I'm calling about my mother. We're transitioning her to an assisted living facility, and we have found out that she has about, I guess, a couple thousand shares worth of common stock, and I think they're worth about $40,000-$45,000, which would pay for her first year in the assisted living facility. And I'm wondering, if we sell those, does she have a tax liability if she moves, you know, if she uses it directly for medical care or something like that?
Yes, she'd have a capital gains tax situation.
Okay.
Hey, let me ask you this. Is your mother in Jacksonville?
Yes.
All right. The moving her to assisted living, can she not live by herself?
Not anymore. No. She is independent living right now, and we had to move her in with us, and we're trying to move her into an assisted living facility.
All right. Well, we have an elder law attorney on staff. In fact, I do elder law as well, but I have an elder law attorney that specializes in nothing but Medicaid. And what he does is that what does a Medicaid attorney do? They have the art of shifting things around, taking the $40,000, turning it into an exempt asset, and thus qualifying for Medicaid so you don't have to spend down the whole $40,000.
Oh, that would be awesome.
She may or may not qualify. You have to qualify. There are three tests. There's an asset test. Now, we can rearrange things so you qualify on the asset side of things. There's a she has to pass like a medical test. And basically, we have to determine that she's unable to do some major function for herself, like feed herself, dress herself.
Right. Oh. We've had her assessed, but well, the social workers have come in and they have. I mean, it's a real runaround process, it seems like, which is why it would be good to have somebody who could cut through the clutter. But there's a social worker that's come in and we've applied for Medicaid, and they've talked about a Medicaid in waiting, but that's only if you're going to a nursing facility. So she doesn't need that. And with her monthly assets, the assisted living facility we found is one that that does accept Medicaid. We're also trying to get her the Veterans Aid and Assistance Benefit. And so we've applied for that, too, because what she needs that much to cover her rent, you know, with her pension and Social Security, she can cover about half of it. And then the veterans would kick in and cover the rest of it. And we were going to use the other assets just to get her, you know, in to have a little bit of a comfort zone, you know.
Well, I think you're going to be better served with all that going on, talking to an attorney instead of the assistant there at the nursing home. Medicaid is a better benefit, and sometimes what you have to do to get the VA benefit is you create if they're trying to get you to do an irrevocable trust to protect the stock, did they know about the stock when you had this conversation?
No. Well, they know it's there, but I just went into her apartment and found some statements, and we're just figuring out how much it's worth.
Okay. Well, that becomes an issue, because if you decide to do the aid and attendance benefit, and you have to do an irrevocable trust for that stock, for example, that would disqualify the Medicaid benefit, which is really a better benefit that creates up to a 5-year look-back period based on the value of the stock if you do an irrevocable trust. So there are a lot of little complicated pieces that would be better to talk to an attorney rather than the person at the nursing home that's trying to help you qualify.
Right. Oh, great. Yeah, please. I'd love to.
All right. Well, if you want to email me, I can send it over to our Medicaid attorney. His name is John Frazier. Get him to give you a call. And okay. We can go from there.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right, Robert. Thank you. Bye-bye. Let's go to William in Tampa. Hey, William.
Hi. Good morning, Joe. Thanks for all your work.
Well, my pleasure. What can I do for you?
My wife and I hold a promissory note in the title for a mobile home that sits in a mobile home park. And the residents there that's purchasing the home from us pays the lot rent, but they've ceased paying us now for several months. How would we proceed?
Well, you can... Okay, the promissory note, are there monthly payments on that?
Yes, it's comparable to an amortized note, but it's promissory note in this case.
Okay, and what's the amount of money they owe you right now?
It's in the range of $5,000.
Well, you can go to... And what's the value of the whole note?
The whole note is probably around $40,000. 40, 45.
Right. So
like
they're
that.
Late. You know, someone would have to look at the provisions of the promissory note, but normally you would sue for the $40,000, hire an attorney to sue for the $40,000 because they're late on their payments.
Okay. So
basically, just like a foreclosure. But with a promissory note, which is not collateral against the mobile home,
yes.
You're going to sue them and get a judgment and then start a collection process trying to get the mobile home. So it's a little bit different than a foreclosure where you can get the property back immediately. You have to get the judgment and then go about the collection of the judgment, which would include the mobile home. Is that their homestead?
No, it's not.
Okay.
They, in fact, do not own the property. That property is rented through the park. They are just in the process of purchasing the mobile home itself.
I see. Well, the answer is they're late on their payments, and after reviewing the provisions in the promissory note, you should be able to file an action to collect the whole note, the whole $40,000. If they're late on their payments, then you would get a judgment. If you're successful, your attorney's successful in getting a judgment against them, then you start the collection process of getting the mobile home back.
So where would we go to file if we did that action ourselves?
Be the circuit court.
Okay.
In Pinellas. Down on Court Street.
Great. Okay. I have another quick question regarding an LLC. May it be placed in a trust, and how would you do that?
Yeah, you would assign the membership interest in the LLC to a trust. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Great. All right. If you have any further questions or need any help, I'd be glad to answer those questions for you.
Okay. Appreciate it, Joe.
Thank you, William.
Great day. God bless you.
God bless you. Let's go to Cheryl in Sarasota.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. I had a question. I just bought a house with my mother, and I didn't qualify for the loan, so her name is on the loan, and I'm on the loan. I'm wondering...
Well, whose name is on the deed?
Well, I think it's, well, they said that both of us are on the deed, but she had, she didn't want to be on anything. She's 83. But I was, so they said I could go on it, but I, but her name had to also be on it because she's the one that qualified for the financing.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, technically the house is mine, but, you know, with siblings and what have you. How does that work?
No, well, I would say technically the house is owned by both of you.
Correct. So with my understanding or the way it was explained to me is that whoever ceases first, it goes to the other person. Is that correct?
Well, it depends on the words on the deed itself. So it said mother and daughter with right of survivorship, joint tenants of right of survivorship. Then, yes, it would automatically go to the survivor upon the first death.
Okay. I just wanted to confirm that indeed that was in place. I have another question that's unrelated. I pay for my brother's membership to a country club tennis. He belongs to the tennis part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And his for a single person, it's $111. But they charge tax on that, excuse me, which is another $720 or something. Is that legal to charge taxes on a membership fee?
Yes, I believe so.
Hmm.
So I think
okay.
That's, yeah. And they wouldn't be doing it if they didn't have to, because it creates all kinds of extra reports that you give to, you know, the state.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I just, it was irritating to understand that they're charging $7 tax on a membership fee. But, okay, well, thank you so much. You've been helpful.
All right, thank you. You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney.
If you're just tuning in, this is a special tribute presentation of Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law, as we take one more time to remember our friend Joe Pippin, who passed away on July 29th of this year. Joe hosted the program for almost 40 years in the Tampa Bay area and all across Florida. He loved interacting with the listeners and the callers of the program. He really enjoyed giving of his time and his expertise in matters all over the map. And that's what we've heard this morning and what we're going to continue hearing. Let's listen to some more.
Hey, let's go to Christina in Brandon. Hey, Christina.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. I have a question about divorce.
Uh-huh.
My husband has filed for divorce against me. And it's, you know, uncontested, and so he's not making any claim against my assets, and I'm not making any claim against his. He got the attorney and paid $1,500, and I do not have an attorney, and I don't really think I need one. But my problem is that
are there minor children involved?
There's no children. No, I'm older. I'm 64, actually, and I'm getting ready to retire. My retirement date is November 3rd. And, you know, I really need to be divorced by, you know, then so that I can get my full monthly retirement pension. But he is an over-the-road truck driver, and he's not in Florida. He travels around all the whole USA, and he doesn't know when he will be able to return to Florida to show up for a hearing. So my question is, does he really have to be in person hearing in order for divorce to take place?
Well, do you have the freedom to talk to his attorney in this case?
I'm not sure. She's real close. She's actually in my neighborhood. So I feel like I could. I mean, she's never said that she wouldn't talk to me. I had to.
Why don't you get your husband to, is he in town this weekend?
No, he's not in town at all. Doesn't know when he'll be back here. It'll be months, he said.
Well, is he easy to call or talk to?
I can text him.
Get him to text you a message that it's okay for you to talk to the attorney. Because the attorney is going to take the position, well, you know, he's my client. I can't talk to you, basically. The attorney could take that position. Then you're kind of stuck. Get him to text and maybe even copy her on the text that you're free to talk to her. and he would be fine. He's probably not going to be able to go to court, but he'd be fine if you go to court. And I think the attorney can probably make it work that you could go to court with the attorney on the day to dissolve the divorce.
Instead of my husband, but somebody has to go to court. Is that it?
You know, he might be able to be there telephonically. There should be a way your attorney or his attorney can figure out how to make this happen.
Okay. All right. Well,
Now, if all that fails, you probably should talk to an attorney. We do have one on staff, Catherine. She was on the show with me last week here, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to her about the strategy and finalizing this. Now, you do want the divorce, I assume.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would make a lousy divorce attorney. I would try to help people get back together. You know, would be.
Oh, believe me, I've tried. We've been separated for a year and a half, and I've done everything, but no.
Well,
he's not interested at all.
If he can text you, copy his attorney on the text, and give you permission to talk to her. Talk to her and tell her that you both want to finalize this. You would be glad to go to court. He's probably not going to be able to figure out whether he can appear telephonically. Perhaps there's a way that the attorney should be able to figure out to make this happen for you.
Okay. We'll do that. Thank you.
Let's go to Marty in Tarpon Springs.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, Marty.
The question I have is, I have a timeshare in South Florida that we no longer use, and I want to know, in lieu of paying the annual maintenance fees on that, could I do a quitclaim deed to deed that property back to the timeshare company?
No, because they agree to it, you can.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just give a debt with some obligation to someone who doesn't agree to it.
Okay.
Now, you could not pay payments, or you could threaten not to make payments, and they can foreclose, but then that's going to mess up your credit.
Okay. All right.
But if they agree to it, or you can find a charity, maybe, that would take it,
mm-hmm.
or some person you want to just give it away, and they accept it, that would be fine.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Philip in Jacksonville.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi,
more of a comment, but I think it'd be really helpful for people listening. I lost both my parents within a year. I was fortunate that they lived very long lives and had a great relationship, great parents. I was very fortunate. You know, nothing was left unsaid and that kind of thing. It was just very... forgiven the circumstances, good as could be. But my comment is, going through all the boxes of their things in the house, we found some incredible things, and it just occurred to us, my family, that how many of those things would be so nice of them to have seen. You know, they didn't even know they had things in boxes from their own childhood and photos and albums and things that... So I would say anybody who has elderly parents, or if you're elderly yourself, you know, go through those things while you're alive, because it's like rediscovering your life again. We've found, months of things and of going back to the 1940s and 50s. And it's been nice. It's been really bittersweet, but it would have been so much better if we could have shared them with my folks, you know.
Hey, you know, it's interesting. Every week when I talk to my parents, something interesting comes up from the past, and I have questions about their brothers and sisters and what happened and to different people and circumstances, and what did they do, and how did they work, and who were they married to, and all kinds of information just comes comes flowing. And when you lose your parents, all that information, the direct information, is gone, basically, except for what you can find with things like you found. So
that's important too, obviously. Ask them, get them on videotape while they're alive and things like that. But some of the things that you'd never think are still there in a box, there are things around. So I would say, if people do have mementos and things, go through them with your folks. And it's a great.
Yeah. I got a little interested in Ancestry.com this year for the first time. I got kind of interested in that. And it's amazing what you can find on there, too, going back to find your roots, basically. Philip, I appreciate you calling.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We thank you for joining us this morning for this special tribute presentation of Ask an Attorney, All About Florida Law, as one last time we say goodbye to our friend Joe Pippin, who passed away on July 29th of this year. We appreciate you being in the audience today and always. We hope you have a great weekend, and God bless you.